electronically, if nothing else.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm working on this Lord Buckley project. It's basically an oral biography. So I'm, as you imagine, interviewing anybody who knew him and anybody who feels they were influenced by him in some
way. Well, I didn't know him. I couldn't say that, but he was certainly a famous person when I was growing up. I remember I saw him perform someplace in North Beach when I was about 16 or 17.
Maybe the Outside the Inside, was that a South Bay place?
Oh, Outside the Inside, that sounds like I may have been the place. A place like that.
What do you remember about the performance? Anything particular?
It was hilariously funny. And I really didn't know that much about it. I think that may have been the first time. But after that, it was kind of like one of those things. Like when you discover gold, suddenly it's everywhere, you know? For me, it was like after I'd seen him perform, it's more or less accidentally, all of a sudden, everybody I ran into knew all this stuff about Lord Buckley and knew all of his routines, and it was all of a sudden everywhere, you know? So for me, it was one of those things. And then the records, of course, they were widely circulated at that time. And I had friends, like some of the guys in the Grateful Dead, one of the guys, Pigpen, one of our early guys, he used to do Lord Buckley routines.
Really?
Yeah. And
I could see him. I could see Phil being really into him too.
Phil too. It's, you know, it was part of the whole Bobster deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The whole Beatnik thing.
Kind of like maybe the other realm, the other side of what Neil and Kerouac were all about.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was the other side of it. Right. Absolutely. It was actually it was the black side of it. You know, if you want to think about it that way. It had a little more of that part of it, you know, less of that on the road deal and a little more of the black experience, which is an important part of the whole Beatnik thing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe more of an embracing too of humanity. The Beats sort of had that kind of existentialist
so fuck you.
Right.
Aloof. Right, absolutely right. Lord Buckley was a more loving kind of spirit, you know. In a way he was he would have fit in good with hippies.
Right. Well, that's my next question is in what way do you feel he might have influenced the hate or the hippies or the counterculture or whatever you want to call.
Just insofar as he provided an aspect to the sense of humor, you know what I mean? It's like a certain coloration to the sense of humor, that a certain kind of ironic, you know, and a kind of a colorful language in using language like a musician uses notes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of riffing. Actually, hippie friends of mine, old hippies, used to call it riffing, really. Where you're talking, you know.
Kind of
talking shit.
Hippie rap.
Yeah, absolutely, talking shit. It's something that's been around for a long time. It's part of the... I see all this stuff in the kind of a folkloric vein, because that's one of my handles on things, you know what I mean? Because it's part of... Lord Buckley's routines had a little of that formalness that you get in... The rhyming recitations of prisoners, you know. And also street rap stuff, same stuff.
Playing the dozens and whatnot.
That's right. All these things that are kind of part of the black language experience, you know.
I have a community. This brings up two other questions, but where do you see maybe Grateful Dead and Lord Buckley philosophy merging?
In a certain irony of viewpoint. You know, I may not even be. It's not literal. It's indirect. You know what I mean? But it fits in there some way in the way we actually do business, in the way we relate to each other. You know what I mean? It's a kind of a sideways influence, but it's definitely some part of it.
Well, one thing I keep on thinking about is that there's so much compassion in what Buckley was doing, and if you don't mind me saying so, I feel that that's a very strong aspect of what you guys do.
Well, part of his appeal is that sort of basic humanness, you know. And with his bits, he always had, there was always a kind of little, you know, he was like a verbal equivalent of Charlie Chaplin in a way. There was some pathos in there, you know what I mean? And you could sympathize with, when there's little stories, you know, the characters always had their human side, you know. And I think that's something missing, say, from Lenny Bruce, you know,
right.
Who was happening on whole other levels, but not that particular level, you know. The heart chakra, so to speak. Lord Buckley was like the hipster of the heart, you know.
Do you have any particular favorites of his?
I love the God's Own Drunk routine.
Mm-hmm.
That's about my favorite. I mean, of all the, and of course the Nas too.
Yeah, everyone loves that. It was hard not to.
Yeah, right. That was like his main, you know what I mean? Showstopper.
His signature.
Yeah. Right.
We mentioned the folkloric element before. That kind of brings up your connection with Joseph Campbell a little bit too.
Yeah,
absolutely. Putting on the new clothes on the old
horse.
Right.
Right.
I know that the Dead did The Raven once.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
That's right.
And Buckley had his own, The Bug Bird, which was basically his.
Right.
Let me see. If you had a chance to back up Buckley musically, what kind of...
I'd leap at it.
What would you...
I don't know. I think it would be really, really sparse. You know, I'd like it really sparse with just a little teeny bit of percussion. You know, for me, it sounds right to go back into that coffee house space. You know, so I have like some bongos and some little wind chimes and... things that make hollow rattling sounds.
Sort of an ethereal kind of.
An ethereal kind of, like a little, you know, a little glassy sounds and stuff like that. And then maybe a flute, very sparse. A little bit of something that sounded like somewhere between a sarod and a banjo, maybe. Something that has that sensual Eastern quality, but has the kind of a happy, you know, thing of a banjo.
Was it Nordine?
I can hear it in my mind's ear. I would love to have, if I had 20 minutes with Lord Buckley, I could do it really nice, man, and, you know.
Was the Ken Nordine project kind of an homage to this aspect of the spoken word?
Another aspect of the same world, in a way, you know. Ken Nordine was kind of like the weird guy, you know, the graveyard shift guy, the guy that works from 2 in the morning till dawn, you know what I mean? He's like that kind of a darker version, not so funny, out front, hilariously funny, more almost as creepy as funny.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, definitely. I've listened to the tape a few times since I got it.
Wonderfully weird, you know.
Were you aware that Buckley did acid?
No, I wasn't, but if he did, I'm real glad to hear he did.
Yeah, he worked with Oscar Janiger, the psychiatrist in the Los Angeles area, you know, who's famous for the things with... you know, Cary Grant and
right.
Jack Nicholson, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And there's a transcript of his experience.
You're kidding. I bet that's amazing.
Yeah, I've gotten a hold of it. It's really pretty. You would love it.
Oh, I bet it's great.
You would love it, yeah, because it confirms everything that world really has spoken to me about. And
well, he was a seeker, you know. I think of him as a seeker, you know. Like a holy man.
Did you know that Dylan did a Buckley routine in his early performances?
I thought I'd heard that he did, yeah.
A piece called Black Cross involves a farmer named Hezekiah Jones, a black farmer who gets hung by the white men for basically having books, essentially.
Right.
Buckley ever come up in your work with Dylan?
No. But next time I see Bob, I'll bring it up.
Yeah, and turn him on to me.
I will. He's a slippery guy.
Yeah, I get that feeling.
You know, it's one of those things you put him pretty much have to catch him on a good day, and he'll, you know, and also he's not above changing his mind.
Yeah, no.
But he's slippery. That's all. That's who he is. And in fact, that's about it. As much as I've worked with him, that's as much as I know about him.
Yeah, I enjoy those shows a great deal. I saw a couple of them here in the Northeast.
Oh, he's a great person. Bob is, I've never met anybody slipperier. You know, I mean, in terms of just being just plain devious, you know, it's just who he is. It isn't something he does, you know what I mean?
I guess, you know, just all the, I mean, I could see him maybe living in a world
I
of paranoia.
That way.
Yeah.
I think he was always that way, even before he ever got famous, before he ever performed or anything.
Always changing, too. I guess maybe that kind of comes with that.
It's a thing about, I don't know what it is, he just, he gets very nervous whenever people start to get close to him.
Mm-hmm. I gather you think Buckley has been neglected to a certain degree.
Oh, yeah. Really? Well, you never hear about him.
I mean, how can we only go back as far as Lenny in that whole genre?
Well, I think that, first of all, Lord Buckley never was a television guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get a chance to see what his performances were like. You know what I mean? Like, Lenny Bruce did do some TV and stuff, so you can see his show.
Mm-hmm.
But Lord Buckley, as far as I know, I bet there's a film version somewhere.
I've been collecting his stuff, obviously, for a while. It's hard to come by. I know there was
I know people who were in that world. They don't have them. You know, you can't. Recording some, yeah. But actual performance of the way he moved around, you know.
There's only a minute that I've ever been able to collect off of.
Yeah, see, that doesn't leave much.
And it's like off of another film that has nothing to do with, you know, stand-up or anything like that at all.
Because he belonged to a different, you know, I mean, at that time, the venues, that he was like in that, in between, you know, the folk, you know, and small jazz, you know, the Hungry Eye and all those kind of places, you know, Inside of the Outside, all that kind of, all of those.
And kind of regarded,
Onion, you know.
Kind of regarded as a curiosity, too, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. Well, the thing was that his work didn't penetrate into the Ed Sullivan reality. You know?
Although he did perform on the Ed Sullivan Show, believe it or not.
Did he really?
But he didn't do any of the hip stuff. He had like an Amos and Andy bit that he did where he would get people up from the audience and kind of play them like marionettes while he talked through their mouths, you know.
Gotcha.
And kind of have get a repartee going between the individuals. And I don't think Sullivan was really into him doing the hip stuff. And
no, hell no. Are you kidding?
I would have.
They'd be afraid of it, you know.
Sun Ra is another person I think of who's been kind of neglected in the same way, who's, you know, contribution.
Well, he's another one of those guys. He's a Twilight Zone performer, you know. He performs in a world that's, it's tough when you're somebody who invents another reality, you know. You invent it, and you can't define it outside of those terms. Like, Sun Ra has invented his own place in music. He's invented his own music. And you know, and along with it, a whole lifestyle that goes along with it.
Exactly.
And that's an incredible thing to have done in one's life. And Lord Buckley invented a kind of a style, a kind of a, what is it, you know, gospel comedy, you know?
Visionary monologue, I like to call it.
Something very special that really, and there are antecedents, but there isn't anything exactly like it, you know? So he's one of those guys, an innovator, but nobody followed through. He didn't create a school of comedy, you know?
Right.
But he certainly have influenced the shit out of a whole generation of comedians.
Without them even knowing it, too,
yeah.
Probably.
A lot of them without them even knowing it, yeah.
Let me see. This is kind of like a generalized question, but, you know, in that book, Lee had a sort of a fearlessness regarding taking the traditional stories and totally revamping them.
Yeah.
Open horizons beyond their original format. Was your exposure to him, did that kind of maybe open up certain musical avenues, say, like taking a song like Stagger Lee or Samson and Delilah?
It's all part of the same thing. For me, at that time, I was starting to discover the richness of American music, you know, the whole total experience, black music, white music, all kinds of country music, city music, you know. So for me, it was just throwing another set of doors open, you know. And I mean, that's what I was looking for, and that's what I was finding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, if you put yourself on a path like that, eventually you're going to find what you're looking for. And that was part of that process, that the process of discovery. And for me, it was just as exciting as everything else was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it became, as I went along, I mean, I knew of people like Neil Cassidy and stuff like that because of reading Kerouac. And then when I met those people, that made it that much more rich.
Mm-hmm.
And three-dimensional. So
Neil supposedly had a Buckley rap too.
He did a couple of Buckley routines, but he could recite all of them, I understand. He could recite all the ones that have been out on record anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He had an incredible memory. And so the way Neil worked was, he's like a cross, you know, obscure references, you know. So you'd catch like a little bits and pieces of Buckley if you listen to him carefully enough.
Yeah, with the tapes and videos and stuff that I've heard, he kind of will go in and out of things so seamlessly that it's kind of, unless you listen to them.
You have to pay attention.
Really into.
You have to pay attention.
A lot of numbers, too, I notice. Really into numbers.
Numerical stuff.
Let me see. You mentioned the lifestyle question with Sun Ra. Buckley, you know, had his own, what he called his royal court, which was kind of a fluctuating entourage of kind of hangers-on and followers, acolytes, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm. I bet he did.
you weren't aware of this, and this didn't.
No,
maybe
I was never that close to know. I mean, for me, he was a large mythical figure, and I was lucky enough to have seen him perform before I knew who he was. You know, and then from there, it was a matter of discovering who is this guy. You know.
Yeah, that's how I got into this, because I just got frustrated with reading liner notes and.
Yeah, they didn't really say anything about him, you know.
I mean, enough to kind of pique your interest, and then
right.
As the years go by and nothing comes out, you begin saying to yourself, you know, shit, this is really interesting.
Right.
Someone has to do something, and you know.
Well, I'm glad you're doing something because I really feel like Lord Buckley is one of those like an almost lost resource. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, you know, and so much of what he was about, I think. Can help us in a certain way understand like how to make the world better.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, he was on the track, you know.
I remember you said something years ago about taking humanity one giant step forward. Now you'd be satisfied with taking like a half a step forward or something.
Yeah, no shit. Well, the thing about Lord Buckley is, I mean, the way he did his show was very dramatic. You know, I mean, it would start off like a regular stand-up routine, but then he had lights and the whole deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he had them cued or whether he did them himself. I don't know. I really wasn't. I was just caught up. And he'd do those spooky things, you know.
Like the Marquis de Sade or whatever.
Right. And, I mean, it would get really dark, you know. And he was like sitting around a campfire with a guy telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it really turned into a kind of a primal experience. And very powerful style, you know. With a lot of real magic. I mean, the kind of thing you can't—it's more—it's you can't act it. You know, you have to think of yourself as Lord Buckley. You know.
Well, I think he did. Apparently, he took—you know—he was Lord Buckley all the time.
That's why. That's one of the things I think that made him really special. This wasn't a guy just—you know—like a, you know, stand-up comedy is like sleight of hand. I mean, it's a technique. You know, it's a technical. Thing and you there's technical comedians that know how to tell a joke and know how timing works and all the rest of that stuff and do that kind of thing. That's one kind of thing. Lord Buckley is like being that guy, you know, that's not a stand-up comedian, but instead it's a kind of like a medicine man, a shaman.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
With that kind of power, it's an elemental experience. You recognize it immediately for what it is, and the thing about Lord Buckley is that I had no idea who he was, and I loved him by the end of the show. You know, this guy is just, you know, this has got to be something.
He had some Native American blood in him too.
I believe it.
You
couldn't tell what kind of what race he was, you know, by looking at him.
Because his features and his complexion, or what?
He could have been anybody. He was like, he looked like a generic third worlder, you know. He could have been from any continent. You know?
Well, same could be said of you too. I mean, I have my own theories about your Jewish heritage, but I guess that's probably pretty much it. I mean, if you don't mind me asking a couple of dead questions.
No, go ahead.
Any chance that the 11 or Here Comes Sunshine will ever be played again?
Yeah, Here Comes Sunshine has a real good shot. The 11 I don't know about, but Here Comes Sunshine has a real good shot.
Here's a culinary thing. I hear that I live about a block away from this place, Manganaro's,
uh-huh.
Italian place here in the city.
Yeah.
Doesn't ring a bell with you?
Yeah, sure. I go there and eat some.
That's what I wanted to confirm, because they were claiming that you were there, you know, for the last tour, and I was like, no.
Yeah, that's a pretty good restaurant.
Yeah, it's just about, you know, 50 feet from where I'm sitting right now.
Oh, great. See, I love to the guys.
I will. Sort of shakedown street around here, but, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is just my little suggestion for the band, but I'd love Bobby to sing Michael Jackson's Billie Jean.
Mm.
I think he could. I'd be so weird.
What a good idea.
I think he could do a really good job of it. It'd be kind
it's
of.
It's actually a nice song.
Yeah, it's a great song. I love that song. I'm not. You know, he's. I mean, you can talk about him all day or for 5 minutes or whatever.
Right.
But there's something about the song I think that would lend itself really well to his.
I'll put it to Bob. See what he says.
At least to get a laugh out of
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Okay.
Well.
I gotta go now.
Happy 50th birthday.
Oh,
and
thank you.
We love you here.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.